White Rocket Entertainment.
This is the AU Wishbone continued off-season coverage.
I'm Brendan Marcello, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight!
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 736.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
From the palatial White Rocket Studios in Southern Illinois and Eastern Virginia, it's the AU Wishbone Podcast. John, how are you tonight?
Very well, Van. How are you?
Oh, good, good, good. I'm had a lovely dinner with gigantic Butterfinger cookie for dessert. You can't go wrong there, and a nice Modelo with the meal. So you know,
outstanding.
It's a good night.
I have a cookout milkshake here with me this evening, and it is spectacular.
I'm a big milkshake guy.
Cast is has many opinions, and we are pro milkshake.
Oh, definitely. Definitely pro milkshake. I'm a big vanilla one, although Rallies and Checkers make a nice banana milkshake.
Okay. Funny, I didn't order this. Like, long story, my children went with my son's girlfriend and stuff. This is a chocolate banana milkshake.
Wow.
I would not have ordered that for myself. It's delicious.
Wow. See, yeah, you're branching out, trying new things, whether you like it or not. Very good. Yeah, I don't know if I would call the thing that Rallies and Checkers serves an actual milkshake, but it's a milkshake-like product. But by having it banana, at least it has an interesting flavor going on there, you know. So, but yeah, so we got a few things to get into tonight. There's been a little bit of movement on the recruiting trail. And there's some news from SEC Media Days coming up and a few other things. We're going to continue our position analysis of the team. But first, John, as we've been doing lately at the beginning of every episode, we have to look at the Auburn Fun Meter. Woo! All right. So where on a scale of 0 to 10 how fun is it to be an Auburn fan for you this week?
I'm going to be honest. The Cam Coleman commitment to A&M really hit me last week. So I'm going to say like a 4.5. I'm down.
Yeah, we're a little down. We're going to talk about that. For folks that don't know, we missed out on a big recruit we thought we had. Fortunately for me, I really wasn't aware that much that he was supposed to come to Auburn. I thought we were working harder on the guy that's committed to Alabama than we were on this guy, and maybe he knows something there. I don't know, behind the scenes, but he ended up going to Texas A&M. So yeah,
maybe we knew something, and that's why we focused more on the other guy.
It could be. I've heard a few little things here and there. I don't want to sound like one of those people that as soon as you don't get a recruit, oh well, you know, I heard they were a criminal and they're going to be in jail anyway pretty soon. I don't want to go there. That's not what I'm saying, but I did hear a few. You know, maybe it's just sour grapes, but a few whispers here and there. So we'll see. It may all work out for the best. Anyway, yeah, I'm at about a 5. I mean, I'm excited for who we did get, disappointed for who we didn't. Kind of a very break-even Auburn week. Not a lot of other news going on, nothing big. So yeah, about a 5. I get it. All right. Well, I guess let me close that out. Yeah, that was easy. That was your Auburn Fun Meter for this week. As we always say, we'd like to know how you all are seeing. If you wildly disagree, if your Auburn Fun Meter is like pegged out on 10 or something, then by all means, let us know why. If your Auburn Fun Meter is at 0, honestly, I'm not really excited to hear from you because I don't want to be brought down. I don't need to know what you're depressed about if I'm not, you know? Don't bring me down, as the famous song goes, right? But there you go, Auburn Fun Meter. All right, what kind of news and notes do we have going on in the world of Auburn sports this week?
Auburn sold out its allotment of football season tickets.
Wow, yeah. I mean, coming off of last season, that's pretty amazing. It really shows the power of hope and confidence and optimism.
And I think how desperate this fan base is for some hope and positivity, right? I mean, yeah. I think, you know, we it's been a while since they had a good dose of that, and I think the fans have it, and I think they're excited.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a combination of a hunger and a feeling that it's justified, right? I mean, we don't have tons of evidence, but from the evidence we do have, which is how hard we see our coaches working and recruiting and the successes they've had so far and the players that they've brought in, both through the transfer portal and the draft and the, you know, the regular
recruiting.
Yeah. We have reason to feel like we are in at least competent hands for the first time in a while. And that goes a long way. You know, that means that we feel like we have a chance and we'll have a good, maybe a good season. So Auburn always does that, right? It's never, if you look back at history, the seasons where the fans are the most excited and sell out the most, it's never the seasons where we're on top. It's the seasons where we're on the way up. It's really weird, but it's true. Like, I would bet you that, like, or the season after the year we're big. Like, I would bet you that 2009 and 2011, we sold out quicker and bigger than we did 2010. It's just, that's just the way it, you know, it kind of goes.
Well, and it's coming off the bad taste.
Yeah.
The excitement. You want to be in the stadium when there's some juice and some excitement and some fun. Like, the 2009 was a big upgrade over 2008. You know, I was at the Arkansas game last year, and that stadium was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were together at the A&M game, and that stadium was rocking.
It could not have been more alive.
And it's going to be rocking when the dreaded Minutemen roll out there.
Uh-oh.
In a few weeks, the magic word, John.
It's UMass Hate Week 2023.
Feels satisfying.
Outstanding.
Yeah, it's satisfying. I think it's the best one so far. We have a new one tonight.
I'll save it.
But we've got a new one tonight. I don't know if it's as good. It's hard. This one's a little harder. You can't go wrong with a fife and drum corps, right? I mean, that just, it wrote itself.
Cannon at the end.
Oh, you can't go wrong. But this one was a little harder. We'll see. Just stick around later in the show and we'll see. I got another one for a bit.
Convince me I'm sticking around.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that. All right, let's see. In other news, SEC Media Days always, of course, come up in late summer, kind of signaling the dwindling days of summer and heading in toward the season. And teams generally take three players, usually three seniors, unless they're like particularly prominent. So we know that this year Auburn is going to be taking tight end Luke Deal and Cam Stutz and Elijah McAllister.
It's interesting, right? Seniors.
Yep.
But, you know, Deal and Stutz, returning players. Neither one of those guys may start on offense, right?
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, I think our transfer tight end may start, and Stutz might win a job at guard, but he might not. McAllister might start on defense as a senior, but that's far from guaranteed.
Right.
And so I think it's interesting they chose these guys. Obviously, they chose them because they represent the university well, and they feel like they're confident they get up there and speak well and answer the questions well and that kind of stuff. So that's part of it, right?
Yes, yes.
But it's also, I think it says something about this team. I've been thinking about this a lot. I think last year's team was kind of a little bit of a stars and scrubs kind of team, if that makes sense, right?
Okay.
You had Tank, Derek Hall, Echo Yoda, you know, Colby Wooden, a couple other kind of star guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, some other, at other positions, maybe there wasn't as much depth of talent, right? And this year, I think the overall roster talent and depth is much better, but we've talked about this when we looked at the preseason all SEC things in the magazine. There are less Auburn guys that are going to be on like preseason all SEC list. Now, there may be some that come along that are on postseason all SEC list.
Right.
But I think it's where we are right now is the team is a little more depth and balance and stuff. And maybe they didn't want to take a bunch of, you know, transfers who had been on campus 3 months too. So,
yeah, there's something to that too, I think. Yeah. Well, I would say that probably your first criteria should be seniors who represent the school well.
Yes.
And then after that, you worry about, are they stars or are they bench warmers or whatever? But that's not what's important, because they're not there. You know, you're not there to say, oh, I'm going to try for 2,000 yards rushing this year. You're there to say, you know, we worked hard this summer and we're practicing and the coaches are good and giving us good coaching and we're going to do well. You know, that's, you know, you're there to say the right things, I think. I wonder how they choose, though. I wonder if they do auditions and practices or something, or how do they...
I think the coaches probably have some ideas about who the pool of potential candidates would be. And then part of it is, you know, who's, as a reward to players that have been working hard and doing the right things, staying out of trouble, but also guys they think would be good, that are good leaders, and that can, you know, then stand up and represent the program.
Yeah. It always makes me think about how for the national championship game in 2010-2011, Chizik decided to make Cam and Nick Fairley the captains. And they said, no, we're not seniors. And they refused to do it. They said, you've got to pick seniors. And so he ended up picking, I think, our linebacker and our offensive lineman and one other, I think. But that was, I thought that was really cool that they did that. Because you could totally mm-hmm. see why you would pick them. I mean, you can't blame Chizik for that thought. But I like that they said, no, it's not our turn. It's not fair. So knowing that neither one of them was coming back anyway. I mean, they knew they weren't coming back, and they still passed it up. So anyway, all right, so they're going to go off to Birmingham, Alabama, to the famed Galleria, I guess, and or wherever they do that now, wherever they do Dragon Con for Bama fans, as I call it, in their cosplay.
Not too many days away.
Yeah, not too long. Yeah. So, all right, in another story, I want to get your reaction to this. SI.com, since we're doing position breakdowns, they have the SEC West broken down by position. So they ranked all seven teams in each position. And I was quite surprised to see Auburn as high as we are in many of the positions. And in fact, they have us fourth. No, higher than that, I think. Maybe fourth. I don't know. They had us really high in quarterbacks. Which surprised me. Let me see. Quarterback Arkansas, Mississippi State, LSU, Auburn. So, I mean, fourth out of seven, right in the middle, but ahead of Ole Miss. I mean, I'm not surprised we're ahead of Alabama, because we don't really know what they're going to do at quarterback, and that's kind of their big mystery position. But, and we don't really know about Texas A&M, but how is Auburn ranked ahead of Ole Miss at quarterback when they've got like three starting Division I quarterbacks on their roster now?
Yeah, and Dart's pretty good, I think. So that's a little bit of a surprise to me. But
don't they have the Oklahoma State guy too?
Yeah, Spencer Sanders.
Yeah, it's crazy. So that's why I sent it to you mainly, was I'm just like, they've got Arkansas ahead of Mississippi State. I mean, I know everybody's really high on this Arkansas quarterback, but he hasn't really impressed me when we've played them, really.
He's good. He's a good player. The biggest thing is Mississippi State's changing the offense. If they were staying in there, you don't know how this guy's going to do in a different system, but he's a good player.
It makes me think of Auburn in 12 going from Gus's system in 9, 10, and 11 to you-know-who's pro-style choke-and-duck system that got us three wins. Interesting, running back Ole Miss number one, Arkansas two, Auburn three. I don't think anybody would say we have a bad running back room, but Ole Miss has that one guy, right, that we could have had, my understanding, that we missed out on him.
Oh, yeah. He's from right down the road in from Auburn.
Yeah.
Phoenix City or somewhere like that. And he we could have had him, as a second kind of running back signee, but we didn't take him. And now he may be the best running back in college football. He's really good. Quentin Judkins.
Yeah. Yep. Unbelievable. I do like seeing Texas A&M last at quarterback, last at running back. Again, this is the Texas A&M team that I keep being told is going to be a top five, top 10 team and going to crush us. And they're at the bottom in quarterback and running back. Really? And that's what I'm supposed to be afraid of. Now they are number two in receivers behind LSU, We're way down at 6. That seems about fair. I think for us to be about 6 out of 7 at receivers seems about fair. Do you think?
Yeah, and I get Texas A&M has 3 good receivers. So I've proven good receivers. So I think we could be better than 6 at the end of the year, but it's fair to put us there right now.
Arkansas number 7 in receivers. Well, should I be that afraid of their quarterback if their receivers are the worst in the division?
He's a good runner too, though.
Yeah, and they've got the number 2 running back, so.
Yeah, they got that Rocket Sanders guy is pretty good for them.
All right, tight end, LSU number 1, Auburn number 2. I think mostly on the strength of Fairweather and then the other guys behind him.
Maybe we got depth there too. We got experienced depth, you know. One of the reasons Deal's gone to, you know, media days. He's an experienced guy, a good productive blocker, a decent receiver.
And then the last position on offense, offensive line, 6 out of 7, which again, we don't, you know, it could be better, but we don't know. So let me run through this again then, just to kind of hit all the numbers. Quarterback, we're 4 out of 7. Running back, we're 3 out of 7. Receiver, we're 6. Tight end, we're 2. Offensive line, 6. When I hear those numbers, I think that we're like 3 or 4 in the division. Am I crazy?
Let me keep going and go to the defensive side of the ball for a second. Are you ready?
Right. Yeah.
Defensive line, 5th.
Okay.
Linebacker, 5th. Okay. All right, fine. Defensive back, 2nd.
2nd.
All right. Kicker, 3rd. Wow. Punter, 2nd.
See, this is what I'm saying. That doesn't sound like the worst or the second worst team in the West when I look at those numbers. Okay, again, I talk about history. It reminds me of the 1993 team where everybody remembered 92 and everybody poo-pooed the 93 team coming in. But when you looked at individual positions that 93 team, you said, okay, well, Stan White and Patrick Nix, that's pretty good. Okay, James Bostic and Steven Davis, that's pretty good. Oh, Frank Sanders and other guys at receiver, well, that's pretty good. You know, our defensive backfield with Brian Robinson and all those guys, that's pretty good. A good kicker, great, best punter in a decade. It's like one of those things where you look at a team and go, the team can't be good. And then you go position by position, you go, you know, they're pretty good. When you look at all the pieces, they're pretty good. So, I mean, is this a mirage?
I think the offensive line might be better than 5th in the West.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, there are some positions here that I think could end up being better. Linebacker could end up being okay.
Yeah. But like you said, receiver.
Yeah.
We don't know.
We don't know. They're going to throw a lot, cast a lot of seeds out there and see what grows with receiver because they got dudes from all over the place now. They may all be duds, but we're throwing lots of bullets out or lots of firecrackers. We'll see if any of them goes off. I mean, it's whatever metaphor you like. So, yeah, okay. Well, we'll see. It's one of those things where when you look at the forest, you think that's not a very good forest. But then you start looking at each individual tree, and you go, "I got some pretty good trees in that forest. I'm not such a bad forest after all, huh?"
How many analogies could Van make?
I make as many as you need. All right, let's see. You want to turn to recruiting? Speaking of recruiting,
yes, let's go there.
So you said Cam Coleman didn't work out.
No, he committed to Texas A&M last week. He's a 5-star wide receiver that's from Phenix City, so not far down the road. Mm. Auburn had been projected to land him in every recruiting service. So this really was a shock, like to everybody in the recruiting, you know, business. Nobody, not just Auburn people, but national recruiting people, nobody thought this was going to happen. It was an out of nowhere, stunning surprise. And it's a tough blow to lose him and to lose him to A&M too.
And some of the speculation, man, my computer's being really slow tonight. I just want it to do one thing. Oh, my computer's being so slow.
Some of the speculation is about NIL money, right? That they backed up the truck and made the biggest offer, and that's why he committed there.
Yeah, there you go. There it is. There it is. That's what I was alluding to.
But I would also say it's not over. Auburn is going to keep pursuing this guy, and I think there's a chance we still get him before the end of the year. Now, I don't think it's a good chance, but I think it is possible that Auburn flips him back before it's over.
Well, I could see, though, Bobby Petrino coming in and saying, I put you in the NFL. And that has an appeal, I'm sure.
Sure.
If I don't get killed on my motorcycle or get fired.
I'll put you in the NFL, and we got the money to make the biggest NIL offer, maybe. So.
Yeah. There's a lot there. So, all right. But we did get a couple of other guys that we're pretty happy about. D'Angelo Barber and Malik Blockton.
Yes. Barber is a 3-4-star linebacker from Pinson, Alabama. A good versatile linebacker, and then Blockton is a good defensive lineman, a good 4-star defensive lineman from Pike Road. He is the brother of current Auburn defensive lineman Michael Harris, but he's much more developed. Harris, remember, went to Kansas and then transferred to Auburn.
Yeah.
Blockton is a much more physically developed guy at this point in his high school career, and I think he's going to be a good defensive lineman for us. I'm excited about that. I've been kind of watching for us to get a defensive lineman, and I'm happy to see Blockton in full now.
Yeah, it's too bad he's not an offensive lineman with a name like that, though. That's like, remember D-liner was the greatest name ever for a D-liner?
Yep.
Malik Blockton would be a great offensive line name. Good gosh.
It's fair. It's fair.
Yeah. And then, of course, D'Angelo, the barber beefcake. John can't go on from it. All right. But we got these two new guys. So, yeah, a linebacker and a defensive lineman. Yeah, there's some dispute. Is Barber? Well, I'll put it this way. Some say Barber's a 3-star, some a 4-star. I looked at the rating site where he's listed as a 3-star, and they give like the little to the third decimal place number, and he was listed right below a 4-star on our, you know, commitment. And the difference in the rating number between the 4-star above him and him was 0.006. So if he's not a 4-star, he's like banging his head on the bottom of it. You know what I mean? He's not way down in the depths. Right. So worth.
And I think he's a good recruit that a lot of people wanted. And then Blockton could have gone anywhere. It really came at us in Texas, I think. Yeah. But he had offers from Clemson and Alabama and other schools. So they're both good gets. So we should be happy about him.
So I noted that now 24/7 Sports has us up from all right. When we got a commitment about a week or two ago, we had gotten all the way up into like the 30s or something, which is about as high as we've been for a while. And we talked about how it really was the numbers game so much more than the quality. But now other teams have gained new players as well, new recruits, and we were all the way down to 49th. In fact, in one of the services, we had dropped out of the top 50. We were like 51, 52. I had to click the See More button to find us on the freaking list, which was depressing. You don't want to have to ever click the See More Teams button to find Auburn. But we went from 49th to 48th by getting Blockton. Yeah, I was surprised that it only gave us one spot. But, I mean, it is numbers, right? Because when you look at, like, they list the average quality number. And ours is way higher than the teams around us. It's just the teams around us have 16, 17, 18 commitments, and we have 10. So our average is way higher than those.
So that's the goal now, is we've got to get some more fish in the boat, basically, and prop up the numbers of committed players before the season starts. I would like to be at 15 commits before we kick off against that team. I'm not going to say their name again.
Yeah, you should probably shouldn't do that. But But there is a chance, because at the end of this month, Big Get Weekend. There's my quick and dirty lead in. Here, let me hit the fake button again. Big Get Weekend.
Clip that. All right. We're definitely going to have that as a radio clip, audio clip going forward. You could, patrons, you should ask for that on your request next week. Big Cat Weekend had been Auburn something done for a while, where they bring in committed players and the very top of the uncommitted players that are leaning towards Auburn and then they just have fun together with them and the staff and the current players. They do a bunch of fun stuff, and it's the end of July when they're doing it, and it's going to be a big time. We expect to get some more commitments that weekend.
Yeah.
As you said last week, that wide receiver, that's committed to Alabama is coming to that. So
come on,
some
baby.
Other top players around the country and some top players in next year's class.
Come on, baby. Come home. Come on, baby.
That's it.
So we'll see. All right. Yeah, let's get us 2, 3, 4 by the end of Big Cat, and then in August maybe a couple more. That should move us up a number of spaces, even if they're, you know, high 3, low 4 star players, and we want them mostly before, obviously. But if we could get 5 more and get up to like 15, I think that this class would move up into the 20s probably. Yeah. All right, so next up, football statistics. You have some thoughts about Auburn's offense to throw out there.
So I occasionally want to take a minute and kind of nerd out for about some football stats. And this,
do it.
In particular, I saw this one hit this week, and it just kind of struck me and it's bothered me, so I want to talk about it. And that is, we'll talk for a second about play-action passing, okay? And the statistic that I saw came out from a Twitter handle called CFB Graphs, and it had the play-action pass rate from teams from last year. The number one team in the country last year was Ole Miss at 58%. Mm. Tennessee was number two at 51%. Auburn was 85th at 18% of passes being play-action passes.
Wow.
And this bothered me because I had just been listening to a really smart podcast about NFL stats and offensive football about how they were talking about how much the play-action pass is kind of a cheat code for offense. That you don't have to be a good running game, and it doesn't matter really, you know, where you're doing it and stuff. The play-action pass always makes the quarterback better, makes the passing game better. Just that's what the stats show. So you should do it more. And so it's bothered me that Auburn didn't do this last year. I think it's a sign of the, you know, the ineptitude of the former offensive coordinator that Potato had, and we'll talk about that.
Potato.
But Auburn was a really good running team last year, and it got way better as a running game after we ran them off. And I understand sometimes bad teams can't use play action as much as good teams. And when you're down 20 in the second half, the play action pass doesn't work because they know you're going to throw.
They know it's fake, right? Yeah. Why would you even?
But when the game is competitive, when it's in balance, you should do it more. Now, some teams don't like it because if you're under center doing it, the quarterback's turning his back on the defense and all that kind of stuff. But it definitely, the statistics show that play-action passing definitively makes quarterbacks better. It can, and one of the things that's really happened is in the old days when we were growing up, they would do play-action passing and up until about 10 years ago, and they would kind of do it to move players around and throw the ball side to side. Now they're doing play-action passing and throwing the ball deep, and they can open those, make the safeties watch the run. And when this is a challenge if you're watching a game. Sometimes it's hard, really hard to tell between a play-action pass and an RPO, right? Because in both things, the offensive line is blocking like they're going to a run play, basically. And so that's what you look at. If the offensive line is blocking like a run play and the quarterback ends up throwing the football, then it's one of those two things. It was either a play-action pass or it was an RPO, and the quarterback made a read and threw it. And there's a fine line there between the two things. Are it doesn't really matter so much, but they both are useful. And then some of the stats that in the thing I just read were about Ole Miss, I believe, were RPOs and not pure technical play-action passes. But it still matters, and it's still helpful to think about in terms of Auburn, where I expect to see a lot more of that this fall. I expect us just to fake the handoff to the running backs a lot more and then throw the ball. I think it's going to make the teams better. And if you go back and watch the clips that we did right after we got our new quarterback from Michigan State in the 2021 season, when he had a good running back, he did a lot of play action to that. He did a lot of fakes to that running back, and it made big plays off of that play action. So I expect to see a lot more play action this fall from Auburn, and I think it will help. And then the last point I just wanted to make is that I truly believe that there is no college football team in America that improved at the coordinator level more than Auburn did on the offensive side of the ball, from the offensive coordinator that Potato hired to Philip Montgomery.
The Field Marshal.
I was prepared.
I like it. We're saving that.
That is the field marshal's new song. Whenever our offense does something good, you will hear it.
I like it.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that. So I was going to just say, as far as play action goes, I think the best Auburn teams in the last 30, 40 years have done it, had been really good at it. The 2004 mm-hmm. team was excellent. Jason Campbell, Cadillac. It didn't hurt that Jason, A, was a really good quarterback with really good receivers, and then B, could fake to Cadillac and Ronnie Brown. I mean, you know, what do you – you pick your poison if you're the defense at that point, right? So that was very effective for them. And we're going to talk, presumably at some point, to the man.
I'm in the home stretch on the book, so we can talk about that in a minute, but I'm
– Good deal.
I think later this month it'll be time.
We just got to get in touch with him again. So there, that the 2014 was really good at it. And I think other teams have been good. I feel like
2017, I think, was pretty good at it.
Yeah. Stidham was good at it. Was not Brandon Cox good at it, I think?
Mm-hmm.
With Kenny Irons and all those receivers, that all the Jason's leftover receivers and everything, yeah, in 05 and 06, yeah. So I agree. I think it's something that Auburn has a proud tradition of being good at. Did we do it a lot? I mean, you know, Gus's offense was so Gus's offense that I can't really remember how much of it was real play action versus kind of RPO.
Read option.
Read option stuff. I guess it depended on the quarterback, didn't it? Because, yeah, like you said, 2017 we did it more than we did in other years. Not a lot of play action from Nick Marshall, I don't think. I feel like he was way more read option.
And I think it didn't – there was some – he did some play action and some deep passing, but I think there was – it didn't make sense to have him play action. It made sense to more to have him just kind of read the defense and then run it or hand it off. So.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's good, and I agree. And so fill us in a little bit more, because you mentioned there Philip Montgomery, the field marshal. What do you expect that he's going to bring to our team that makes him such an upgrade, just in general? I know we don't know specifics yet.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest difference is just how to plan an offense, how to game plan for opponents, how to take what your players do well mm-hmm. and turn it into a game plan for opponents, right? You see this, we saw this in the Borges book, right?
Yeah.
And Montgomery is very experienced. He's done this a lot over the years, many times. He gets good defenses. He understands what his players could do. That Baylor offense he ran was lethal. They were awesome. And I think he's going to have much higher talent than he had at Tulsa. He can coordinate an offense. He could keep a defense off balance. And he's not afraid to call the same thing if it's working. So I think he has the confidence to design a game plan and understand, but also to do that season-long thing that we've seen the good offensive coordinators do. Mm-hmm. I'm showing this now, and the defense is going to, you know, watch this film, and then three or four games later against a different team, we're going to show it to them again, and they're going to react a certain way, and we're going to burn them. He can play those cards that way and be confident enough to do that.
John, I'm so excited for when the day comes in Central Florida that Gus finally springs that big secret play on second and four that he's been setting up since 2013. I mean, I know that we were just part of the plan, right? And he's still setting it up at Central Florida. There's going to come a day when Central Florida is like in the national championship game and they just need that one play to win the national championship. And Gus is going to be like, all right, it's when we get that first down and we get 6 yards, I want you to throw it in the end zone. And they're all going to faint and they have to call a timeout to wake everybody up. You don't just run right up the middle again, coach? No, this is it, boys. This is it. And when we do that, you know what we're going to have to do.
And we got
to
get better at celebrating.
That's right.
You're joking, but it's funny because it's true. But the other part of that that's relatable is I think Montgomery is going to use tempo some, but he's not going to be an absolutist about it. There's times where we're going to go fast. There's times where we're going to slow down and go at a regular pace. But I think he will – you know, I think he and Freeze will have their kind of finger on the button, and when they feel like they could take advantage of a defense or get them off balance, they're going to keep going.
Is Montgomery going to spread us out like outside the numbers like he did at Baylor? Should we expect that kind of thing? I find that intriguing.
I hope so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
That's a real Big 12 thing, right? It's harder to get more Big 12 than that.
In Tennessee, I mean, it was really that one scheme, right? That one Baylor kind of scheme and spread to other schools in that conference. But Tennessee ran it last year, and it opens things up. It makes the running game better. It makes it harder to can't double team the outside wide receivers unless you want to take a bunch of guys out of the center of the defense. And so it's a little, I mean, people have said, oh, it's too simple and it's not, you know, advanced, whatever, but it's like a cheat code sometimes and it gives you easy things. And I'm like, give it to me.
You know, that kind of offense, when it first, that type in general, I mean, Leach and Mummy and all the passing oriented stuff, right? If you read that book, and I can't think what it's called now, but there's
Swing Your Sword.
No, that's Leach's. That's Leach's book.
Perfect Pass.
Perfect Pass. You read Perfect Pass. I've said it before, boys and girls, if you want to read a really good book on not just football personalities, but how the game itself works and has evolved, The Perfect Pass. It's about Leach and Mummy and the whole idea of throwing the ball rather than running it. And it's really a fun read. But it one of the things you take from it is how looked down upon and made fun of and ridiculed and never trusted that type of approach was. But I'm going to call this the Teddy Roosevelt approach because one of the things I came across in researching our current book is that, you know, in the late 18, early 1900s, like the first few years of the 1900s, football was deadly. Like a dozen players a week would die and hundreds would have broken ribs and just mutilated, just awful, including Teddy Roosevelt's son, one of them, who played for, I guess, Harvard or whatever. And Harvard was a serious football power back then. You know, they were like, you know, USC or something. And so basically football at that time was rugby. You know, you just got in a giant scrum and ground each other's faces into the ground until you got like a yard. And then you reset and did it again. And one of the main things that Teddy Roosevelt wanted him to do was put in the forward pass because it spreads players out. And that's what that Big 12 Baylor thing does, is it keeps the players from concentrating right at the point of attack, and it spreads them out. It's been interesting to see the evolution of the game over the last several decades, right? Because when you and I were kids, we were seeing sort of the tail end of the era of bringing more people to the point of attack, right? The wishbone, the triple option was all about bringing more people to the point of attack with the ball than the defense has. That it was the idea of you get a bunch of people to where the ball is going to go quickly and outnumber the defense. That's why the service academies all adopted it. In particular, Bear Bryant adopted it with Alabama. It goes back to Texas and Darrell Royal. It goes back to Emory Ballard at I guess was it Southern Miss or wherever he I forget where he may have been the offensive coordinator for Texas at that point before he went to Southern Miss. But then Bear Bryant adopted it in the 60s and it became a big thing in the 60s and 70s at Alabama. And then, of course, Pat Dye brought it to Auburn in 1981, and we ran it 81, 82, 83, 84. Yeah, we ran it 4 years. We switched to the I with Bo in 85, his senior year. But that was about overpowering more people at the point of attack. The reaction, because for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. The reaction to that was the spread type offense, and this is a version of that, where you're putting players all over the field to spread them out, to open up running and passing lanes. And what Baylor did that we're talking about is take that to the extreme and put the receivers so far wide that they're almost, you know, ordering popcorn in the stands. They're almost sitting there with the water boy and the towels, you know, and all that. I mean, they're way out. And it really does spread out the defense. And you know what Mike Leach would do? I don't know if he did it so much at Mississippi State, but I know he did it at Texas Tech, which was, again, in the Big 12. He had his offensive linemen with huge splits that you could have driven a car between the offensive linemen at Texas Tech because he had them so spread out, but he had the players going all over the field in that passing attack. It didn't matter, and it was effective. It forced the defense to spread out. So I'm intrigued. I like when we have a cool offense that not everybody's doing. I loved when we had the wishbone, and I loved when we had what Gus was doing when it was in its first few years. And now I'm looking forward to seeing something new and innovative and interesting from the field marshal. So,
me too.
All right. So we've been doing our weekly position reviews. We've done the punter and somebody else.
Kicker.
Yeah, kicker. Okay, McPherson, yeah. So what are we up to this time? Talk to us. Introduce us to the new position reviews.
So again, we're doing this because there's a bunch of roster turnover. We got a bunch of new guys on the team, and even we forget who's back and who's where, but also what we were good and bad at in some way. So tonight we're doing the return game. So first, punt returner, and we were okay last year, punt returner. Auburn was eighth in the SEC. Keontae Scott was the punt returner. He returns. He's back. He'll be the nickelback on defense. And will he do it again? I feel like I had – once Scott got the job, I feel like I had some confidence in him.
It's funny. I don't even remember his name. It's like he just went completely under my radar all season. I remember that I felt pretty good about our punt returner, but I don't ever remember, like, going, oh, who is that? You know, it's weird because usually we talk about the punt returner. We're very conscious of who it is. I don't know why he didn't make a mark on me last year. I guess we got other things to worry about.
I think that's it. And I think he was – we had gone through some guys before that, I think, who were a little shaky.
Yeah.
And so I think he, you know, had a couple of games where he had some good returns. But, you know, it wasn't awesome, right? But he wasn't dropping the ball and going backwards and that kind of stuff either.
Yeah.
So I think he's fine. I think he'll probably be back. There's a certain question of at a certain point, is he too valuable? If he's the starting nickelback, and that's one of the most important, you know, positions on defense, is he too valuable to be the punt returner? We have some other wide receiver or somebody potentially could do it, maybe. Yeah. Or a young defensive back, maybe. So we'll see who ends up there. I think Scott probably has the edge just because you got to trust the player in that position, and I think he proved he could do it and not mess it up. So the other big one we're going to talk about is kickoff returner, right? And Auburn was bad in this last year, 121st in the country and 12th in the SEC in kick return efficiency. And that's kind of surprising.
It is.
Because most of our returns were by Jarquez Hunter.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, wasn't he our – now, he – I do remember doing it, and I'm surprised.
But I just think overall some of it is the schemes. I think we're using the special teams coaches and the players in front of him. We didn't have as good a depth, so we didn't have as other good players out there on special teams. So that was a problem. Now we have Brian Battee.
Yes, we do.
And he is a huge difference maker at this position.
I mean, All-American a year ago, right?
Yes, yes. A guy who I think could be, you know, really – who was the last player that you remember as a kick returner for Auburn that you were like, I'm not going to get popcorn when this guy's back there?
It's been a while. We've had some decent ones, but I can't remember the last time we had a kick returner that I was like, ooh, don't miss that play. That's going to be huge, you know, in a good way. Who are you thinking of? I can't.
At freshman, Trey Mason.
Yeah.
Was pretty good.
He was.
Michaela Brand returned kickoff some, right?
And then Grant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was probably really the last good. Time. About 10 years ago then, 10 years ago.
Yeah, so in 2021, Battee returned 20 kickoffs and averaged 32.5 yards per return.
Holy crap.
And 3 touchdowns.
Wow.
So he was on fire that year. Yeah. And you know, that's a good amount of returns. And the other part is if you have a guy that's that good, then all of a sudden the team's kicking away from him and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So if we get somebody else back there good with him, maybe one of the young running backs or young receivers, then I think we could be really dangerous. But I think Battee could be a real weapon for us in the getting us better starting field position. This is one of the things that, you know, we had a good punter, but we weren't good at kicking off. And we weren't good at returning kickoffs. And if we just get better at those two things, just kicking off and returning kickoffs better, we're talking about like 5 yards, you know, each time we kick off or receive a kickoff. That adds up. Those kind of hidden yards add up over the course of the game.
They do.
And that's a difference between winning and losing a lot. So I think this is something I want us to consciously keep an eye on. Is this kickoff and kick return, what it's doing to field position and how it's mattering for us?
No, it's and I'm really curious to see, because, you know, it's funny. The two of our transfer players are coming in with better 21s than 22s. Peyton Thorne had a better 2021 than 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And Batty had a better 21 than 2022. So it may be that if they'd had as good of a 22 as they did a 21, they wouldn't have transferred. It may be that they realized that things were going down for them because their teams were going down. They needed to get off the sinking ship and go somewhere where they could get back to those 2021 levels. So rather than being concerned that we're getting players in decline, think of it as we wouldn't have those players if they hadn't appeared to be in decline, at least, you know, for that last season.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I looked up two more Auburn kick returners while we were talking. One is Noah Igbinyagani had one really good season as a kick returner.
He did.
And then in 2009, 2010, DeMond Washington was pretty good.
Yeah, he was. That's right. I remember that now. So, let's see. There was one other thing. All right. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when you're looking at a season like we are this coming fall, you've made at least minimal, if not major, improvements everywhere you could. So the next thing, as you said, is finding hidden yardage and just slowly building up. It's just the little things, right? You don't have to go, you don't have to go from, you know, mediocre quarterback to five-star quarterback to help your team. You can just have a better kicking game, have a slightly better return game.
Yeah, be a little better at stopping the run.
A little, yeah, just a little bit of things here and there. And that, yeah, that's all you really need to do to improve the situation. Yeah, so, all right. So we did mention that we are going to talk, hopefully, to the architect of that 2004 offense we were talking about a minute ago, and we'll see how that goes soon. I've read his book. John's reading his book, almost done, and so we're going to got that to look forward to coming up. So we did suggest as part of the AU Wishbone Book Club that you too grab a copy. We're not doing this to sell copies, but I'm sure he would appreciate if you grabbed a copy of his book. It's very much worth reading. It's very entertaining. It's like sitting down and talking to Al Borges. You know, he doesn't write it in a stilted way. It's written like he's just talking, which is probably how it was done. And that way you'll be up to speed, and we're going to talk to him hopefully and kind of get his insights on those years that he was at Auburn and beyond. It'll be a lot of fun.
And so if you have a question either about that, being a fan of the team or having read the book, let us know.
And I am now going to type in this. And we did have a Formula One race, finally. And so our fantasy Formula One league has been updated for another week. Here now are the top 10 teams. Oh, there's been some movement. Hallelujah. There's been some movement. Our number one team is Teamy McTeamface. Our number two team, this is in the Fantasy Formula One League, and you can join it by becoming a patron and clicking on the link in the patron's post that tells you how to get there and sign up. Teamy McTeamface, number one. Tiger Transit, number two. Your new number three, I just got DRS, John, and went around him in the straight, is Scuderia Toro Plexico, up to number three. Cheeky Nando's is down to number four. I went around him. We probably banged wheels a little bit as I went by. Sir Bacon the First is fifth. Mississippi Racing, sixth. Scuderia Aquila Guerra is seventh. Albimobile, eighth. Smokescreen 45 is nine. And Solitaire is 10. So the only movement in the top 10 this week was me passing Cheeky Nando's. And I don't know how that happened. And it didn't help that Pierre Gasly, who's on my team, got -3. Thanks for nothing, Pierre. And Fernando only got me 12. God, Logan Sargeant got me 6, and he's just there to fill up a space. So anyway, there you go. So if you want to play Fantasy Formula One, go to www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button to become a patron. And here now are the fine folks who are currently patrons for this program, and as always, I will read whatever they put in their name, as long as it's family oriented, and any sound effects that they request from the soundboard. We have to, and somebody's missing. I have to look into it. We have to thank Boris the Tiger's burner account, Carl Von Drunker, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Logan Chilton, Ann Kangian, Bill Weathers, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Eric Morgan, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Finn at KSC, Matt Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, who says... Oh, it's so good. It's cathartic.
I'm getting better at the timing the last no. I just
that last no is just it leaves you hanging. It leaves you hanging. You think he's done? No. And just oh, it's so good. I think I like it so much because it has a rhythm and a poetry and a musicality to it, and because it represents the existential angst that we've all felt at that moment. At moments like that.
That man is us.
Yes, that's the end of the 2013. BCS Rose Bowl. It's Van Tiffin kicking that field goal in 85. You know, it's all those moments that gave us AU PTSD. So, yeah, we feel it. Let's see. Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden. I had to read the instructions for this one.
I don't have facts to back this up.
But Nick Saban was the leprechaun in Mobile in 2006. I believe it.
Please clap.
Let's see. Of course, the traditional now.
Tonight's forecast. A freeze is coming.
Wouldn't be the same without that one. Alex Brown, Ben Bloodworth, Bleeds Orange and Blue. It's hard to say those three in a row. Calibrating my fun meter in the back booth of...
Jones Barbecue Foot Massage!
That's right. Chris Hilton, Dan Thompson, Earl Ricks, Bobby, I accidentally handed my wife a glue stick instead of chapstick. She still isn't talking to me. All I can say to that is...
Not for while you can, the monkey boy!
That's right. I try not to tell dad jokes, but when I do, he thinks they're funny. I got the rhythm of it a little better this time, I think. If the early bird catches the worm, I'll sleep in until there are pancakes, says 76 Tiger Esquire Sleazy Shyster. Okay, random sound clip for this week shall be, let's do this one.
What is your name? John Ringer. What kind of a name is Ringer?
Well, I'm adopted. I spent most of my life in institutions.
Doesn't surprise me. You look like a typical low-life character to me.
I hadn't used that one in a while, so...
That's a great one.
Yeah. Is that from Stripes?
Stripes, yes. His name in the movie is John Winger.
But they call
And he's driving that. A cab, and the woman is trying to read his name card, and she's like... John Ringer? What the heck kind of name is John Ringer?
That's so good. There was a Plexico in one movie. I think it was like Year of the Comet or something, but I never have seen it. I know I read on the box it had that name. I'm like, oh, okay. Let's see. Jacob and Robin Fleming, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Lane Middleton, Mickey B. No One Fights Like Gaston, Algo Rhythm and Blues, Paul Miles, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Rusty Owen, Steve Harlan, Theodore Gary, Warhammer 6, WDE Richie, two guys walked into a bar, the third guy ducked. By the way, all the Iron Bowl reading I've been doing the last couple of weeks, I want to just go ahead and throw this one out there for no reason other than it relates.
I got great news for you.
Auburn beat Alabama by 12 points.
No, this is important, honestly.
So good. I just love Frank Sinatra and Angie Dickinson talking about the Iron Bowl. You can't beat that. And Auburn winning in it. That's so good. Weagle, Wes Atkinson, Wes Byram. Cool. William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Colby Butler, Corey Smyer, David D., David Simpson, Die Bama, who is at, apparently.
Jones Barbecue Foot Massage.
I hope he has fun. In honor of the new Nepal... oh, gosh. Oh, boy. In honor of the new Napoleon trailer dropping, we should exile Hugo Sleaze to St. Helena. Did you see the new Napoleon trailer today, John?
Yes, and I'm very excited.
It looked incredible, doesn't it?
Looks great.
Oh, man. The few little scenes we've seen of them filming it, it looked like almost a stage play. It was always just Joaquin Phoenix just kind of standing there in the costume, like it had been on a stage. But that trailer, we saw like the pyramids of Egypt. We saw a battle on a frozen ice lake. We saw the bayoneted troops marching into the Senate at St. Cloud, I think, which is what I've been really wanting to see. Oh, that scene. There's a moment, and it's in the books. I've read all the Napoleon biographies and history books, but the movies never show this. But when Napoleon actually took over, he went into the Senate meeting at St. Cloud. They were meeting at St. Cloud way outside of Paris to try to keep it safe. And he goes in to address them, and they won't listen to him, and they kind of mob him. And he comes out of the Senate building with his face bleeding, and there's still dispute to this day. Did they try to stab him, or did he scratch himself? You know, what exactly happened? But he goes up to his whole army that was camped out next to the Senate, and he's got blood on his face. He says, look at this. I went in there to try to speak to them about democracy and stuff, and they tried to kill me. And the soldiers like fix bayonets and march in through the front doors of the Senate. And these 80-year-old, you know, senators wearing their red togas like they're in Rome, they all go diving out the windows in mortal fear. And a bunch of them's togas got hung up in the bushes. Think about the shrubs around Jordan-Hare, you know. And so you had these 80-year-old naked men running down the road to get away from the French army coming in the front door. That to me is like the most visually fascinating, striking scene. And they've never done it in anything I've ever seen. So I'm really hoping that he does it.
I think they will. And we have a listener question about this movie later.
Oh, good.
So just to send you out there.
No, it looks so good. I'm a huge Napoleon fan. Look, if you can see behind me in various books here and in my offices on the campuses. All right, a few more to go. Josh Teal, Just Wait Till Next Year, Kevin Mahan, Luther and Kelly Ottaway, Melissa Blackstone, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, and our one-time and anonymous donors, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Spider-Man has a winter jacket made of Mediterranean flatbed. It's called a Peter Parker. Hey-oh, hey-oh. Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Wiggle87, Woody the Jag. All right, that's cool. Got a new one there. At the Mad Reaper Pepper Company on Instagram. Alex Nguyen, Ben Amos, Ben Regis, Brian Albanese, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Chris Braun, Clay Henson, Colonel Dad, a.k.a. Ari Ben Zane. I'm missing my category, mister. Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, Darren Pyle, Elizabeth Donald, and finally,
we gotta get better at celebrating.
Thank you, Gus. How do two cats end a fight? They hiss and make up. I am Tiger. I'll buy this for $1. Yeah, well, I think we all just did. James Taylor, Jeremiah Schumann, Jim McCrory, Joey Miller, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains, who says the barbecue.
You have failed me for the last time.
AKA Auburn Dad for Life. Well, it's not too long till we get to the barbecue again. It's coming up. Mark Squire, MVP, captivating Kathy.
Your love of the halfling's leaf has clearly slowed your mind.
I'm getting dry. I stepped on Kathy's little sound effect there. Sorry, Kathy. Nick Craig, Paul Bankson, Rich Hammett, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland. Spanky, I'm at the bottom of this list because...
Scott Wilson!
That's the line you can, monkey boy.
Sports Illustrated's Auburn Elvis, Stephen Thompson, the Slinko family, Tim Sauls, Trevor Johnson. What do Auburn receivers wear when it's cold? Sammy Coates. Hey, hey-oh, hey-oh, hey-oh.
Why are you patting the monkey boy?
That's right. Why are you booing John? He's right. Brent Rumble and our one-time and anonymous donors. Go to www.auwishbone.com, which I've newly updated. I moved a couple of things around. I added our big banner to the top of it. And I moved the big orange button up higher on the page. There you go.
I just counted. I believe we are 7 weeks away from barbecue.
Holy cow. 7 weeks. 7 weeks to barbecue. That's not like a movie. Coming this summer, the feel-good sensation of the year. 7 weeks to barbecue. Starring John Ringer as the barbecue cook.
John, that barbecue ready yet?
With Van Plexico as the assistant chef.
It's going to be ready in a minute, Chief.
Let's do the whole plot here. Anyway. We got to guess the game. Woo, 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 woo. Jared sent in a guess the game, and guess what number it is? It's not 100. Who can
Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Ulrich, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game number 99. Guess the Game 99 is brought to you by our friend Rusty Owens. So let's see what Rusty suggested.
The other side of the coin is the offense hasn't shown anything.
No, and so you might as well put another three on the board.
And conversely, let them start back inside the one. I'd go for it.
All right, guys, I will see you in the hint file.
All right, those were old ESPN announcers.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this is an early 2000s or 90s game.
I have a theory.
And it was a fake or at the goal line to score a touchdown, and then you heard the band kick in. What is your theory?
They said the other team wasn't moving the ball, so you might as well. Is that kind of what I was hearing there? Might as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or stick 3 points on the. I think the one guy was saying take the field goal because they're not scoring anyway. Three helps you. The other guy's like, well, you might as well go. So that was, they were kind of disagreeing on that, but I think. But do you remember a game where we got down early in the game? The other team wasn't moving the ball. We got down to their goal line. We brought out a kicker, and instead of kicking it, the holder threw it up over his head. The kicker.
Say, this is the LSU game in Baton Rouge with Tuberville.
That's what I'm thinking. The cigar game, 99.
I thought about that game.
Buried them.
Just because it was a fake that led to a touchdown.
Yes. And it's one of the few. I can't remember many other times we did run a fake field goal that resulted in a touchdown. The whole time Gus was our coach, I don't think we ever faked a field goal. Because he had good kickers and he wanted to put them out there and let them score points. I don't ever remember Gus faking a field goal. He did some hootenanny before it, like, you know, the swinging gate and stuff. But once he lined up to kick it, he kicked it. So I feel like it's Damon Duvall, 99.
I like it. Let's go to the info.
And it's
like,
so funny, like, though, John. That year, that team won 5 games all year. But 2 of the 5 they won, they destroyed LSU in Baton Rouge, and they destroyed Georgia in Athens. You know, that's like if the 2021 team had beaten Alabama.
Yeah, that's the analogy.
That's so weird. How they lost to Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Close games, but they lost to Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Florida. But they just crushed LSU in Georgia. Oh, we don't know if that's who it is, but are you comfortable with that? You have any other thoughts or guesses on it before you want to?
No, I like that analogy. And some of this, some of your who beat who may be rock, paper, scissors kind of thing, but I like LSU 99 as our guess. Let's go to the hint file.
All right, let's do it. And plus, this is Guess the Game 99.
Here we are in the hint file. Let's get rid of some of those bleeps. Give it another listen.
The other side of the coin is the LSU offense hasn't shown anything.
No, and so you might as well put another three on the board.
And conversely, let them start back inside the one. I'd go for it. Damon Duvall. And it's a fake! And it's going to be a touchdown! Damon Duvall with the touchdown. How about them apples?
Well, he heard you.
All right. I will see you guys in the answer file.
That's it. And
I think that was – go ahead.
Well, obviously, we were right that one of them was saying you should go for it, and one was saying go ahead and kick it because they're not going to – you could win the game 3-0, basically.
Yeah.
But
I think that was Charlie Steiner and Mike Gottfried from ESPN at that
point. I was going to say Charlie Steiner for sure. Yeah, I guess Mike Gottfried. Yeah. Yeah, that was it. Something else that reminded me of, but I can't remember. So, yeah, I think that we're absolutely right. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I've never seen the fake field goal done that way again. That's the last time. I don't know if I've ever seen it before that. It may be the only time that I've seen them do a fake field goal by throwing the ball straight up in the air over the holder's head and just no look. He just threw it up over his head. But it did go quick.
All right, gentlemen, if you guys figured out that this is Auburn playing LSU in 1999, then you got it right. Rusty suggested that we do the 1999 game for the 99th Guess the Game. And I thought, well, that's not too bad. And when I saw the fake field goal by Duvall, I just knew it was the one. So thanks, Rusty, for making that cool suggestion. If you'd like to be like Rusty and send in a suggestion for Guess the Game, I am at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It is all at Yard Sale Artist. Or you can email me at Jared, that's J-A-R-R-O-D, at theyardsaleartist.com. Until next time, which is number 100.
Woo!
Van, John?
Whoa, nice.
War Eagle.
War Eagle, Jared. All right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what he comes up. That was neat that they did that for the 99. That was really good that they did that for 99. I'm looking forward to what he comes up with for number 100.
I know. Now I'm a little scared about 100.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I don't know. But we got that one, so that was cool. Let's see. Oh, I did want to mention the Blue Sky and Threads apps are out there now, and people are jumping on them. And I am on both of them. So if you're looking for me, at Van Allen Plexico on both of them. So come on over and join up. I'm not dying to leave Twitter because I have a very large group of people I enjoy interacting with on there that has not recongealed yet, but we'll see. All right. I guess we're to listener questions. Don't forget, we've got the new Hate Week audio. Is there going to come an organic time to play it, or should I just play it?
I think we could save it for around the SEC.
Okay.
That's
all right. Let's go ahead then and ask Mira to bang the gavel here.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
All right, what do we got this week?
All right, first question is from frequent question asker Bill Miner, who says, guys, in light of the recent Indiana Jones movie about a dial going back in time to try to change a singular event, what singular event at Auburn Athletics do you wish you could go back and flip to achieve our desired outcomes? So many options.
Oh, so many. So many. Oh, man. Where do you even... I mean, you know what?
See, you could go to a game. You could go to a coaching hire.
Yeah.
I think also about a recruiting thing.
Yeah.
What if Auburn had gotten, say, Lamar Jackson under Gus that succeed? Nick,
what
would have happened?
What if we'd gotten Emmitt Smith in
1987? Mm-hmm.
God, can you imagine
that as well?
Can you imagine the 87, 88, and 89 Auburn teams as they were and then put Emmitt Smith in the tailback position? Good gosh.
We'd have beaten LSU, win the national title.
Oh, at least once. Yeah. Wouldn't have tied Syracuse. Oh, man. That's the player to me that I wish we could change.
Is there an injury also maybe you think about? Maybe Chuma or something else?
Chuma would be great. I'd love to change that 100%. I'm going to go back way further, though, because I think you'll like this one. I think that I can change the entire trajectory of our entire football program with this. Not just like one season or a couple of seasons, but like I can change the entire state's dynamics, maybe the number of Iron Bowls that were won by each team. Who's the dominant power today? Here's what you do. Because this is one of the things that in the research I've been doing on our new book, which obviously I've let slip that it involves Iron Bowls. I've done a lot of research on Iron Bowls. A lot of research on Iron Bowls in the last month. And one of the things that I learned, and I kind of knew this a little bit, but I've learned it for sure now, and I'm sure that people like Michael Scott Nicky knew it, and I'm sure we have listeners that knew it, but I'm learning it. And that is, before we quit playing Alabama for 41 years, before we quit playing them, we were the dominant football program in the state of Alabama. Not Alabama. Alabama didn't even field a team 1 year early on for reasons that I'm not going to go into. But when we quit playing each other, we were the dominant power. Alabama was not taking football seriously. In the intervening years when we were not playing each other, they started taking it much more seriously and hired Wallace Wade and Frank Thomas. They went to those Rose Bowls. They got a taste of it, and they started putting resources into it, and Alabama became Alabama. Alabama was not Alabama when we used to play them. Meanwhile, during that same time, we were focused pretty much on the Georgia rivalry and the Georgia Tech rivalry, but we started not taking it as seriously and not putting as many resources into it. And so our program started sliding. And by the time we started playing each other again in 1948, I think it was, they had overtaken us pretty much permanently. The only times we've had the upper hand on them have been few and far between. Part of the 80s, part of the 2000s is about it, really, that we've had a clear upper hand. And even then, it wasn't, you know, wasn't like Tennessee Vanderbilt or anything. It was more like, nope. You know, it was just, you know, it's more 6-4 or 7-3 Iron Bowls, yep, rather than 10-0. If we could go back and change how Auburn thought about football, and maybe change the way Alabama thought about it, during the 1920s and 30s, if you could go back and make a couple of tweaks strategically, when you got those programs back together in 1948, it's Auburn beating Alabama 55-0, not the other way around. And I think that changes the whole trajectory of the series. To this day.
I like it. There's your winner.
That gives you a lot more than one game or one championship or one player. And it's, but I don't know exactly what you'd have to change. Like, who would you have to assassinate? You know what I mean? Who would you have to, you know, hire? Who would you have to,
Or say the change is that the series doesn't break down and we stop playing.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Because Auburn had the momentum and we could have kept going.
True.
What if out of those next two decades, Auburn wins 7 out of 10 both of those decades?
I mean, you know, Alabama didn't take the lead, like a definitive lead in the head-to-head series with us until like the mid to late 60s. And when Bear Bryant's big 70s winning streak started, Alabama was only leading us by like 2 wins. That 9-game win streak in the 70s made all the difference.
Yes.
in the numbers today. Because we're more or less even with them since Bear Bryant died. We're pretty much even with them now since Bear Bryant died. The difference in the series, Saban or no Saban, the difference in the series today really goes back to the 1970s, to the end of Shug and the Barfield period. That's it.
That's right.
So if you could flip that around, we'd have a 10-game lead on them.
There you go.
So, all right. Good question.
All right, next question. It's from Chris Braun. This is a good one. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
It says, hey, guys. I've been meaning to get this sent in earlier, but I wasn't able to until now. Regarding UMass Hate Week 2023, ejected into my veins. He says, I'm actually a Massachusetts native and a UMass grad.
Wow.
But I've always been an Auburn fan, given that my parents and a lot of my extended family went to school there. Some of my earliest memories are walking around the AU campus and checking out Jordan Hare, that sort of stuff.
Wow.
The irony of Auburn playing UMass in a tackle football contest is not lost on me. My first weekend at UMass as a freshman was the infamous home loss to South Florida in 2007, where I had to ask myself, what the hell is the world coming to?
Thankfully, hell is the world coming to?
There you go.
Thankfully, my senior year was all bliss during the 2010 BCS championship run.
Yeah.
Realistically, I only attended 2 or 3 UMass games as a student, and believe me, that was probably a few too many. As far as our season opener this year is concerned, we really shouldn't have anything to worry about. UMass is truly abysmal, and wow, I still question the decision to move up to FBS, though the game checks that UMass receives after each Power 5 match probably go on to fund the entire athletic department.
Yeah, probably.
Long gone are the days of the 1998 team that beat a Paul Johnson-coached triple-option Georgia Southern squad to win the 1AA National Championship, oh, or the 2006 team that lost in the finals to Appalachian State. Victor Cruz hasn't salsa danced his way into an end zone since I was a student there, nor has anyone else. It's a pretty tough sell to get great players to commit to an FBS afterthought in rural western Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
Despite
I didn't know
all UMass. This,
okay,
UMass has had some pretty respectable losses on the road in big SEC environments in recent years. There are games that surely had some portions of those fan bases clamoring for their coaches to be fired. Mm. For example, in 2016, UMass lost 24-7 at Florida, but Florida led only 10-7 after three quarters.
Oh, I remember that.
In 2017, UMass lost 17-13 at Tennessee, with Tennessee up just 14-6 at the half.
Wow.
And in 2022, UMass lost 20-3 at Texas A&M, with A&M holding just a 13-3 lead heading into the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what does Auburn have to do on September 2nd to take care of business early and get the Hugh Freeze era started off on the right foot? War Eagle, Chris Braun.
Oh, that's really good. Yeah. What do we have to do? I think we've got to act like we know what we're doing. We got to play good, solid football and take care of the ball. And I don't think we're going to show a lot of our cards.
But don't make mistakes.
Right.
Don't give them extra possessions. Don't commit penalties. Don't turn the ball over. But also, like, be aggressive and try and, like, put them out. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't try and play it real close to our vest.
I feel like we are going to play it pretty close to our vest. I don't think we're going to show a lot. I can't imagine
show a lot,
plays.
But I also think it's the first game, and I think part of the game plan for this fall is I think Freeze and them want to create some excitement.
Yeah,
and they
true.
Want the fans to feel like they're having fun and the recruits to be excited. And I think they're going to throw some deep passes in this game, try and take some shots early to get them out of this, you know, blow them out.
Yeah, that's very likely. That's very possible. That's true. That's a good one.
All right. And our last question comes from listener Ben Bloodworth, who asks, what is the over-under on how many sound clips will come from the new Napoleon movie?
Oh, yes. That's such a good question from Ben. Well, I'll have to have it on video first, and then I can go in and take, or on YouTube, and then I can go in and cut pieces. But, oh, I may have to move some of my Kingdom of Heaven, how many Kingdom of Heaven clips will I remove to put Napoleon clips in?
Someone knows. God knows.
That's right. That's right. In fact, this may be the very last time I ever played this clip.
You sit at my table.
Because I could see that one kind of, you know. In fact, let me find a scenario for it. Okay, so Texas and Oklahoma will be joining the SEC, right? So you can see the Longhorn and the Sooner walking into the room in Birmingham, and our commissioner looks up at him and says,
you sit at my table.
There it is. There it is. Here's Feinbaum. Get used to him. He's going to be around a lot. There it is.
All right. That's it for listener questions. Those were good. If you have more questions, please send them in to us next week.
I think it's time to take a trip. And the one that has a very long lead in. There it goes.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
There they are.
That's Texas and Oklahoma walk into Birmingham, into the... They walk into the Galleria, whatever you call it, and then our commissioner, who's our commissioner? God, I'm just blanking out suddenly tonight. I want to say Mike Slive, but I don't think he's our commissioner anymore.
No, he is not the commissioner
anymore. I'm about 5 years behind now, sorry. But our commissioner says,
you sit at my table.
And all the other teams, coaches and players look up and see Oklahoma and look up and see Texas, and they say,
there they are. Are they not a shame on their
conference.
It's good.
All right. All right. What have we got in around the SEC, if anything?
Well, Van, I think it's time to talk about Cal Hate Week 2023.
The following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
It's California Golden Bears Hate Week 2023. PM Pac-12 time slot of
there you go. Woo! That one took about 2 hours to put together the other morning.
you got the cow thing and you got the time slot thing in one sound effect, I really appreciate that.
There was an irony I didn't even appreciate until later. Did you hear the bit of music in the background in the beginning? Mm-hmm. It's Somebody to Love by Jefferson Airplane, and yet I was getting the idea from my Jefferson Pilot clip.
Okay.
So does Jefferson Pilot the Jefferson Airplane? I'd never thought about it before.
Maybe so.
Yeah. Maybe so. Okay. There you go. All right. So we've got two hate weeks down, and I guess how many to go? One to go? Two to go? Got to do New Mexico or whoever, New Mexico State. Which New Mexico are we playing?
Sanford is the early one. New Mexico State's the late in the season one.
All right, hold on. Before we sign off for tonight, and I realize we're almost out of time. Before we sign out for tonight, oh, crap. I knew it was going to be hard. Here it is. All right. Before we sign out for tonight, I want to know, did we ever do Sanford? I'm looking. We've got Penn State, San Jose, Mercer, Western Kentucky, Louisiana Monroe. Oh, that's the Warhawks report. We don't have that on here. Central Florida report. Georgia State hate week. Huh?
We should still be doing the Louisiana Monroe report.
Yeah, well, is Terry still there? We should just do it anyway.
I believe that's what I'm saying. I believe Terry's still there.
Okay. Well, we'll bring that one back out. I keep finding hate weeks. There's Liberty. That was the one that started it all, wasn't it? Liberty in 2018. I feel like that was the one that kind of. There's a lot of them. I need to get a new soundboard that's got more spots because there's a lot of retired. Oh, there it is.
Sanford Hate Week 2019.
That was different. That was early days. I was just getting started at it there. So that was the primitive one. They got a lot more sophisticated.
Listen, sometimes the golden oldies are fine.
There you go. All right. So we'll have to do a new Sanford with a lot more complication to it. Did have the slamming vault door, though.
Listen, I'm still shaken up by this idea that we need a soundboard with a lot more slots in it. I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
I'm frustrated because I actually paid for more slots, but for the one on my iPad, and we don't use the one on my iPad anymore. So the one on the computer only has like 64 slots. The one on my iPad has like hundreds, but I don't use it. So I might email them and see if they could switch my thing over to this or something. I don't know. We'll see. I'm sure you'd be excited if I could add like 100 more sound effects.
That's the word, excited.
Oh, for a muse of fire.
That one's made it the whole time. That one's been on there from the very beginning. All right. I think we're pretty much done at this point before we completely jump the rails. Any final thoughts here in the depths of summer as we get ready for the coming of the SEC Media Days?
Let's be careful out there.
Yep. Fair enough. All right. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. Where you go, John?
Where you go, man?
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.